three, two.
Welcome to Working Musicians, a feature of theworkingmusician.com. My name is Roger Z. I'm your host. I love it when I look at the wrong camera, but I'm smiling at the right one now. Today, I'm very pleased to have Mr. Glenn Govier as my guest. Glenn, you wear so many hats.
Indeed.
Tell us some of your hats.
It's a pleasure to have you ask me onto the show. I know we talked about the podcast the last time, and it was good, and I'm hoping today is going to be good too. Many hats.
Well, you're a bassist.
I'm a bass player. I have been a band leader. I can be a band leader. Sometimes I'm a band leader. I'm a web guy, audio guy, engineering guy.
That's right. You're trying to sell him some new equipment while we were back there. I love that. I'll get you a new board cheap. Awesome.
It's been an interesting road. I just hit my 50th year last month.
You're admitting 50. God knows how
50.
Old you really are.
No, that's all I'm going to admit to at this point, Roger. And out of those 50 years, 38 of them have been out there playing bass.
No, recently you had to take a little break due to some back issues.
I did. Actually, it was more than just back issues. 2003, up to that point, I had been gigging pretty heavy duty, playing with the Shades, playing with Rough and Ready, which were, great experiences, a lot of fun.
The Shades who are now
NRG.
Morphed into NRG.
With Nicole Hart. Which is a fun thing, but it kind of became too much on a couple of fronts. Number one, business became very, very difficult. My job became much, much more difficult, and it was kind of tough to devote the level of concentration and the level of attention that I really needed to do with the band. So, at that point I split. Plus, there were health issues. Obviously, I did have some back issues. I've been able to get those back issues under control.
Well, you look in great shape.
Thank you, Weight Watchers. Thank you, all the people who have given me encouragement. We're halfway there. I didn't quite hit my target, which was 50 by 50, but we're about 35 down at this point and another 35.
But you
ago.
came from work to the gym directly here, right?
Yeah, the back of the gym. I mean, I've been doing the gym thing since like 1984, and it's nice to really kind of be back at it. And last week was the first week in years that I did.
Man.
I did 3 days at...
See, I never try to overdo it right up front, because...
No, I've been working up to it. There was a lot of physical therapy, and then, working maybe once a week, twice a week. So I'm kind of back to 3 times a week, which feels very, very good.
Now, in terms of your job, a lot of people come on the show, and they don't want to talk about...
I don't want to talk about my job.
Rock stars don't have real jobs.
Well,
they only talk about them after they sell a million records.
Funny thing about that, I mean, this is the working musician show. Well, yes, I am a musician, and yes, I am working, but the definition of working musician...
means that you play once a week.
I play. I'm out there. I'm playing. And I've got a corporate gig.
What is your gig?
Okay, right now I am a service marketing manager. I work for a very well-known organization.
Okay, I get the hint.
Sony Electronics.
Oh, okay.
Which I will indeed, tell you that they have been very, very supportive of our musical careers. Strangely enough, you think, corporate life? No, they have been exceedingly supportive. So much so that the band that I'm currently with, which I have been with for 15 years, even through the Shades, even through Rough and Ready, through all the blues stuff, my pop band, yes, it is a pop band, VSB, which was originally Variable Speed Band, has been going for 15 years and is basically the house band at Sony Electronics.
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, if you sell recording equipment, it's not a reach that...
A lot of the technical guys that you find in the business, I mean, I'm I came up through the ranks, through the technical ranks, the New York studio scene, audio, first audio, then video, then designing video systems and studios such as the one that we're in today.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You find a lot of guys who are on the technical side of the business also are like frustrated musicians. Guys who, and some of them...
It's not a leap.
It's not a leap. You know, they're kind of on the same circuit, which is interesting. And you find a lot of these guys, and not just hacks, not just guys who are wankers, or they're guys who are really good. Guys who are really good and just made the decision somewhere along the line, listen, I'm not going to be a pro player. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to get a regular job because, you know, for whatever reason, I'm going to get a regular gig. And then maybe they tried to be a pro player at one point and it didn't work out. So I got to feed my family. I got to keep a roof over my head. So what do? They go out and they take a corporate gig. And there's a lot of guys in, obviously, the audio business and, as you find, in the video and television business who are musicians. And, you know, are they active musicians? Some of them are, some of them aren't. One of the things that we've done is actually be able to bring people out from these careers that they had as musicians, and they've put their equipment in the closet, they've put the career on hold. There's a lot of guys that over the past 15 years we've been able to draw out and actually get out playing.
Well, that's part of my message. My message is it's not all or nothing.
It is absolutely not all or nothing.
It's not black or white.
No, it is not. There's a lot of shades of gray in between. And, you know, you can have that corporate thing, you know, whether it's corporate or whether it's, you know, just a day gig, and you can still do your music. You know, and I'm living proof. It's sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes, you know, it's a juggling act, and, you know, okay, I'm doing this at work, and I've got this gig tonight, and, you know, what am I going to do next? Time-wise, it's a juggling act. It's not easy. But if you want it bad enough, you make it happen.
Well, I'm thinking of Tom Schultz from Boston.
God bless him.
Was a technical guy for Polaroid, right?
I believe it was Polaroid or Xerox, and then he obviously to Boston, and then started his own company.
I can't remember. The Rockman. Whatever happened to that?
I still have one. I still have one. I'm sitting up on the shelf someplace, still in working condition. I mean, from a technology standpoint, you think how large that thing was, and now you got stuff like the Pandora, which is very, very small and can do so much more. But, you know, back in its day, it was hot stuff.
Well, it's just so funny. The technology has changed so
much.
Very
scary. Very scary. Technology across the board. You know, just even from my standpoint as an instrumentalist, the technology that was in place when I started back in 1969 versus the technology that is here. I mean, forget about the technology of, like, recording. Just the technology of musical instruments. It's just, it's bloody scary.
Well, you know what? When you started playing the bass, probably the thing was 15-inch speakers, right? And reflex cabinets, right?
Worse than that. 18-inch speakers, and I have the dual disc herniation to prove it.
And now it's 10-inch speakers and 8-inch speakers.
But, you know, Roger, if you go back even further, look at the technology there. What was the original bass amp that was produced by Leo Fender?
I don't know.
It was a 410.
Oh, 410, right. What was that?
It was the basement. It was the original basement.
That's funny.
Which transmogrified into, you know, a piggyback situation with the head and the separate cabinet and the 12s or the 15s. But the original basement design was, in fact, 410s.
Right.
It's funny how we came full circle, you know, going through big amplification back down to a situation where we have small amplification again. Back to that 410 cabinetry type thing.
Well, I think what they're able to do, well, what blows my mind are these modeling amps, like the Fender Twin, the new Fender Twin Reverb.
The whole Line 6 thing and the Variacs. And,
right.
And, I think Johnson did that for a while. Very clever. Very clever. To my taste.
Yeah, I feel you don't like it, right?
No. No, and you know.
But you know, it makes money for musicians, because think about it. Jimi Hendrix now, he's got these devices. He's got like a Jimi Hendrix wah-wah pedal, because I just went to buy a wah-wah. And who would think that there's a difference between wah-wahs?
Oh, incredible. The plethora of equipment and stomp boxes that you can get. It's scary.
I bought a Crybaby wah-wah, and it was distorting like crazy. It wasn't happy with it. Now I looked on the internet, and I went back and I bought a Vox, which is the one I had in 67.
Exactly.
And it's cheaper than all the others, and it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. It doesn't distort. Yeah. The only difference is in the old days, they were combination wah-wahs and volume
pedals. Right.
They took the volume pedal away.
I think there's a few that still do that. You know, a few that still have that.
But, I mean, the technology now. Now I talk to guitar players who don't want to use a tube amp. They prefer to use one of these modeling amps. Or they'll use two amps and they'll hook them together and...
It's interesting like that. You know, there's flexibility. The purists are always going to walk in with their tube amp. They're always going to walk in with their little 6L6 type amplifier with the 112. And, you know, they're not, generally speaking, going to use the modeling amplifiers. But
what do you use?
Personally? Oh,
yeah.
God. Oh.
Tell me your
okay,
my rig.
I'm actually using my backup rig. I have a lot of rigs from a bass standpoint.
It's part of the joy of being a musician.
Yeah, 400 Gallian Krueger 400 RB as the head.
But that's not really. I mean, it's powerful.
Two rack units.
Two
rack units, not a one rack unit. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Two rack units and it's about 220 watts.
RMS.
RMS.
Yeah, that's
means
a lot. Wired.
Absolutely, not peak power. Different ways of measuring, but
right.
You know,
but RMS is the smallest.
Yeah. RMS is the truest measure.
Right. The other one's peak will give you what they put out at the very top.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. There's a lot of ways. What they call in the business specmanship.
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, what specifications versus this special. Bottom line, it sounds great. I use two cabinets at this point, depending upon the gig. They're both SWR Goliath 3 Juniors, which means that they're 210s. So if it's a big gig, I bring both cabinets, and there's my 410s. If it's a small gig, I've got the one cabinet, and boom. You know, I don't have that bad a schlep.
Does it have a tweeter built in?
Yes,
or?
It does.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
So that's nice. So that's nice. Two 10 inches, but that's a lot of power for 2 inches.
Big time.
Well, why do you need that much power when you could split to a direct box?
Because you don't always have that option. You know, it depends on the club that you're going into. Some clubs, let's say Mexicali Blues, beautiful PA system, wonderful. You get the guy set up the direct box, and basically you're using that head and that thing for your use on stage.
Right.
Your stage volume, and the system is driving your bass sound. That isn't always the case.
Especially for a blues gig, right?
Especially for a blues gig if you're going into a small room. I mean, chances are you're bringing your own PA.
Yeah, I bring my own PA, and I would never put a bass through my PA.
It depends. You know, in a blues gig, and depending upon the room, maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't.
Well, I have have you ever seen my...
No, I haven't seen your rig.
I have these old Bose speakers. They're on poles.
The 802s? The old 802s?
I think they're 402, 401.
Okay.
They have 2 or 3 inch speakers in them. So they're just about that size. And
They're still a wonderful, wonderful speaker.
Oh, they're awesome.
I saw 2 years ago, the Subdudes, one of my favorite bands out of New Orleans, came up and they played the Bayou. And they were using Bose 802s, dual stacked, with Bose Acoustimass subs. So there's what you got to do. You want to run your bass through it.
Right, I got it.
Get yourself some subs. Of course, that means schleppage.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, at one point I lived in Manhattan. I always ended up living on the fourth floor or the fifth floor.
Have a walk-up.
walk up, of course. Brownstone, whether it be in Soho, the Chelsea, Upper East Side. I was always on the fourth floor. It seemed to be the luck of the draw. And at that time, I had an acoustic. I had a couple of acoustic. It had one 15-inch, but a reflex cabinet.
Yeah.
And the wood must have been green. And, you know, I just got tired of humping that thing up the stairs.
Terrible.
And, you know, what I did. I finally said, this is ridiculous. First of all, I can't put it in the cab. So what I ended up doing is I got this Polytone Mini Brute 3.
I remember those.
And what it is, it's a 15-inch speaker and nothing else.
Yep. They were the jazz amp back in the 80s.
Well, actually, a jazz amp.
The old jazz players, that was what they had. It was the old Polytone.
Right. It wasn't that great for blues, but the thing is you can lift it in one hand.
Yeah.
So that was...
And that was critical if you were gigging in Manhattan.
Right, because you want to put it in the... you know what I did? Hell, I strapped it onto... In those days, like stewardesses would have these little racks that you'd put the elastic cords around, and then you'd roll it. So I would take it down the stairs, roll it on the street, bring it in the bus. I always said, you know what? I'll bus it to the gig, and I'll cab it home.
Yeah, gigging in Manhattan, that's something. That's something.
I spent many years on Bleecker Street.
I can't say that I was that lucky. I mean, I was doing like college type gigs back then.
College gigs are great.
They get
the big money.
There wasn't a lot of money, but there was something.
So we didn't talk about your bass.
Oh,
your four or five string.
The five string. It's just funny you mentioned that. I was talking to another bass player on the way over here. My five string stays in the closet. I bought a five string. I bought a Stingray 5 back in 1995. I've never bought a brand new bass. I'm going to treat myself. Everything was always used.
Stingray is made by Stingray?
Music Man.
Which is basically came out of Fender.
Came out of Fender, yeah. It was a Fender derivative. I think Leo Fender was involved for a while. Ultimately was purchased by Ernie Ball.
Oh.
Great bass, but not my thing. You know, I'm a Fender guy. I'm very much a Fender guy. The Stingray was also very heavy. I mean, with my back issues, I need a bass that's fairly light. So what I use these days is it is a 97 or a 98 American Deluxe Jazz.
Why didn't you get a five string American Deluxe Jazz?
We're just having this conversation. I could have gotten like a Roscoe Beck, which was out about that time. Five is a really different instrument. I mean, you think, okay, well, you throw a little string down at the end. It's a different instrument. And the guys who play six, you know, God bless them. A cat like Kit Sophos with Gil Parris. Incredible. But for me, that's something different. You know,
your whole hand position has to change.
Totally.
You can't play like this. You have to play like that.
It's like playing an ironing board. I can't fret it. I don't have like really, really giant hands.
Well, I watch Kip play, and Kip uses the pads of his finger rather than the tips of his finger.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. I mean, of all the cats in Westchester, and there's a lot of good cats out there, he's just scary. He's scary as a player. He's just a monster.
I'll tell you why I like the five string bass. Because I have a low voice, so I'll take a song like Superstition, which was originally in E, and I'll lower it to C, and if you got a five-string bass, you can play that low C. If you don't, you got to move it pretty high.
We find that with VSB, that as we're aging, and basically four out of the five guys are now over 50, we have to transpose the tunes. We can't sing them in the keys that they were originally written in.
Well, Mick Jagger is doing that with Satisfaction. He doesn't do it in the original key anymore.
But, you know, the nice thing is that we're still out there and we're still banging away. And maybe we should be ashamed of ourselves. Oh, you know, let's have some dignity out there.
Where do you play? Where does...
VSB has always been kind of an internal thing, so it really we have been playing at the Park Ridge Marriott, which
Park Ridge, New Jersey,
in Park Ridge, New Jersey, which is where corporate headquarters is. we have a deal with them where we come in, we bring people in from work, and they make money on drinks, and we get to play.
Do they give you a free meal, or do they pay you?
We won't discuss that. You know, there were things have changed. The management over there changed. Originally, it was a pay gig, and right now, it in some respects, it's much more important for us to just be playing.
Sorry, I shouldn't have asked that question.
Like a team building exercise, almost like a corporate team building exercise. You know, some guys get out there, these corporate guys, they're out there on the golf course. We've got guitars in our hands, you know, and we've got the PA set up and microphones. It actually is a team building exercise because, you know, you're interfacing with people that you see every day, but you're seeing them in a different light.
Well, I know you also go out to some of the local gyms.
Yes.
We were talking about Nicky Armstrong's
gym
in Ridgewood, New Jersey, at a club called...
Blend Bar. She just started this up recently. Blend is a fairly new restaurant in Ridgewood on Chestnut Street. And nice room.
That's the main drag there, right?
It's a side street.
Oh, okay.
East Ridgewood Avenue is like the main drag.
Right.
But it's a side street, and... they've got a nice room, they've got a nice PA, and she's got good people coming down. Who else am I doing? I've been doing Johnny Feds in his jam over
the one in Emeralds and Yonkers.
Emeralds and Yonkers. Unfortunately, they're going through some changes over there, so he's going to be doing that once a month, and he's going to be doing that one down in Bruckner Boulevard once a month.
Right, and he's also got one at Cafe Rio on Mondays.
Actually, tonight.
In Mamaroneck.
Monday, in Mamaroneck, on Mamaroneck Avenue, over there. Can't remember the address, but yeah, he's I like his jam. I like playing with Feds. He's a great guy. He's a great player. He's got good people that come down. As far as other jams go, I want to get out to Curtis Winchester's here in White Plains.
The Lazy Lounge.
On Mamaroneck Avenue. I'd like to get out to that one. I had just, you know, time wise, it's been very, very crunchy. You know, work-wise and band-wise. So one of these nights I'm going to get out to see Curtis and his guys and sit in.
Okay, let's move on to the canned question.
Oh, God, not the canned question.
The canned question. You know, it's just so funny because they don't work anymore because no one takes a CD. Everybody will take an iPod.
I was just going to say, you know, you said, what's your Desert Island disc? You know, no. I got an iPod here and it's going to have hundreds of tunes in it.
Right, but my point is to find out who your real influences are. You know, and I never ask once. So tell me some CDs you would take, or who would be on your iPod.
Who would be on my iPod? Well, definitely the Motown collection, the Stax Volt collection. You know, in terms of bass influences, you're talking James Jamerson. Okay,
as the hook
as my number one influence, followed quickly behind that by John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin, and Clive Chaiman of the second Jeff Beck group. And then there's a whole myriad of people.
The Rough and Ready group, right?
Bingo. There's a whole myriad of people. I have to give my props to Mr. McCartney because he was the guy who did, in fact, inspire me originally back when I was a young pup.
Well, he invented melodic bass playing.
Absolutely. But James Jamerson invented bass playing the way it really is today. I mean, before that, you think about that. Before Jamerson came out in 61, 62, the bass was the electric bass, not upright bass. And he was actually a brilliant upright player as well. The electric bass was less than 10 years old. I mean, Leo Fender came out with the first electric bass, and Gibson also came out with one. It was in 1951, 1952. So it, as an instrument, there weren't that many people out there to master it yet. He's the first guy who came out and said, this is the way it's played. And everything follows from there. I mean, there's a lot of other different cats.
He played with one finger. He picked with one finger.
He said more with one finger than most people say with 10.
But he played so fast. He got that from the acoustic bass.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. But who else might be on this disc? You know, like I said, Stax Volt, Motown. Got to get some Beatles in there.
Well, you know what? This is going to lead right into the next question because we're running a little short here.
I see we're short on time here.
So we're running into the next question. The Glenn Govier Tribute Night at Madison Square Garden. Okay, so we know who's going to help you out on bass. John Paul Jones. You're going to get him up there.
He's going to be up there. You know,
you can have different people for different sets.
I actually had the sets written out here. Well, I've got my
Come on.
But I don't really have them finished up here. You know, we've got the rock and roll set, the pop set, the R&B set, the jazz set, the blues set.
So we've got 2 minutes.
Okay,
go
in
down.
2 minutes, you know, blues. You're going to have Stevie Ray Vaughan, Robert Ford, Albert Collins. On bass, you're going to have Roscoe Beck or Tommy Shannon, Chris Layton on drums, Marsha Ball on keyboards, Muddy Waters maybe vocals, backing him up on vocals, Stevie Marriott from Humble Pie,
And Small Faces,
the late Paul DeLay, who just passed maybe 2 weeks ago, on harp. So that's, you know, your blues guys, rock and roll. You're going to have some amalgamation of Springsteen's band, U2 with the Clash, you know, people like that. The pop side, you're going to have Marshall Crenshaw up there. You're going to have the Finn Brothers. You're going to have, I forget the kid's name.
John Mayer?
Yeah, John Mayer, Matthew Sweet.
Matthew Sweet,
you know,
okay.
I mean, you're going to have Joni Mitchell up there. You know, there's Peter Frampton. You're going to have up there. I got to give my props to my man, Jeff Beck. You know, I mean...
Jeff is grave. I need a hot new album from him, though.
It's been a while.
I need one that's like blow by blow, that's not too electronic, too gimmicky.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But anyway, I just want to take the last few seconds to plug the New York, New Jersey Blues Collective, which you are the moderator of. It's a Yahoo group.
It is a Yahoo group. And basically it's a communications link that we established back in 1999. Ties people together, ties the blues musicians together from the New York area.
Well, Glenn, I want to thank you so much for making your way down here. Long working day, the gym, finding your way to White Plains.
And now off to see the old boy in the rehab hospital.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Roger. Are we out?
We're out.
We're out.
Good job.